Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, the struggle with Olivia and Alyssa.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Multnomah County District Attorney Candidate Forum on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland Branch of the Multnomah County Library in Portland. The Multnomah County District Attorney is one of the most powerful elected persons in the state. Several candidates are running for this office. All candidates have been invited to attend, speak to the audience, and answer questions. Again, that's the Multnomah County District Attorney Candidate Forum on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland Branch of the Multnomah County Library, 805 Southeast 122nd Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday, December 7th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Fake Radio reenacts the historic radio shows the old-fashioned way, dressed in period clothing and standing with scripts in hand in front of old microphones. They'll recreate the 1947 broadcast of Lux Radio Theater's It's a Wonderful Life, including the commercials and announcements. Again, that's It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday, December 7th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. Again, that's It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday, December 7th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Bow down to a racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation. I'm gonna stay.
Freedom, 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 fre counsel in the boardroom, so give me more room. Deny my opportunity, you in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free, don't hinder me, let me be.
I'm fighting for freedom, I got the heat in case you need them. A straight soldier, ain't nobody told ya.
We've been together since I created border. The African border celebration is in order.
My only chance of being free is to fly within me, and it's illegal to kill a freaking Negro. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his freedom.
And you're here listening to The Struggle with Olivia and Alyssa and two guests. Hi, Alyssa. How are you?
Olivia, hi. Thank you. There are a lot of jokes live in studio right now. We have two guests this
Very
week.
Great guests.
Mason Mimi from Critical Resistance, Portland. Hi, Mason.
Hello.
Last week, I played the speech that Angela Davis gave at the Critical Resistance 20-year anniversary celebration in Oakland. I was there that night, and I played that while we were gearing up for the celebration in Portland for Critical Resistance 6 years, and thank you very much for your work putting that on.
Thank you.
It was called Abolition is Liberation, and it was probably one of the better big events put on by an organization that I've been to.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, and it had a really good MC.
You!
Oh
my goodness.
So we'll talk a little bit about Critical Resistance Portland, what you all have coming up, and some of the politics around it as a refresher for people who may not remember. And we also have Angeline Booth, who was also responsible for a great event last week, or a series of events. Last week was Trans Empowerment Week at Portland State University. And Angeline is the Trans Women Affinity Coordinator at Portland State University.
Hi.
So there was also a big event to finish off the week, and I was just hoping that you could talk a little bit about the series of events and then the keynote.
Oh yes, our lovely keynote.
Also you. Wow. You brought these people here to talk about yourself. Wonderful. Thanks.
I go where the struggle is, and these are good people.
And what do all four of us have in common? We used to be in the Portland State University Student Union.
Yes. is.
I'm so sorry that they didn't chime in with you.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm here, I promise.
I thought we were all going to. It doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't
You're
matter
feeling anymore. That conductor spirit.
Yeah. If you can't see me, none of you can see me. I'm moving my hands emphatically like this and like up and down. Anyway, Angeline, tell us about your event.
Yeah, totally. So in my role as the Trans Women's Affinity Coordinator at PSU in the Women's Resource Center, I aided in creating like a series of events that were for trans empowerment, resistance month, basically, which was centered around trans joy and what that really means to all of us and who gets to claim that and like pushing on this like tragic trans narrative that's so often in the media. And so this past week we had quite a few events. We did Trans Day of Remembrance that I personally hosted and facilitated, and that was beautiful but heavy, as that always. And then we had the our whole day of like a transaction and care conference, which basically folks came to a series of workshops to learn about like trans history and to like just be in community, entirely created and run by trans folks at PSU. And Alyssa got to be on a lovely podcast there. Said a lot of amazing things.
It's called Gender Reveal.
Yes, with Molly Woodstock.
And I didn't know that it was really popular until I started telling people that I was going to be on it. So people should listen to the Gender Reveal podcast. I subscribe to it on Spotify, so I'll be getting all of the episodes now. I thought it was pretty dope.
Molly Woodstock was once a guest on a show that Mason, a radio show that Mason and I used to do together.
It's true.
Called Big Things.
Can you talk about what you remember from Molly and some of the things that
What were they
said?
On for? Oh, they were on because of when it was found out that that restaurant, that Mexican restaurant in Portland, had like got like actually legitimately like stolen their recipes and the way they made their food, right, from like these people, this like area that
Is
they traveled to.
Is that what Molly
Mexico.
Came on to talk about?
Yeah, and they made that list of all those. That of all those restaurants that, that were like authentic that you could go to, and it like was circulating around. It's like a really big deal when it was happening.
Yeah,
I think that is what they were on for.
Yeah,
because it wasn't for the podcast, because they had didn't do the podcast. They were writing for Willamette Week when we had them on.
Oh,
we talked about like race and identity and all kinds of and gender and the stuff that you talk about when you run a radio station or a radio show at Portland State University.
That's the only things you talk about.
Yeah, it's all we talk about. It's not true.
Willamette Week put out some stuff this week that I wanted to talk a little bit about and get your
me
weighing in on it, because it's pertinent to workers' justice, which is like one of the main things that we talk about on the show. Troutdale, Oregon, the Amazon warehouse, has a injury rate of 26 per 1,000 workers, which is more than 6 times the industry average.
Wow.
So they've got the most dangerous facility prize
In Troutdale, out of all the Amazon warehouses.
Troutdale, Oregon. So
wow.
It's under scrutiny, and I just wanted to underline that for people who might have missed that. That's from the Willamette Week this week. Then there's also racial disparities.
No.
Apparently.
Oh my God.
This is like a new phenomenon in the
workplace. Racial disparity.
In Multnomah County, but the disparities are rising in incarceration rates. A report found that black adults are 5 times more likely than white adults to have a case reviewed by the court and be prosecuted and convicted in Multnomah County. So you're 5 times more likely.
Me.
Yeah.
And you.
I'm sorry to tell you. Please don't let the cops catch you.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like when I was first coming to understand like police violence and incarceration and all of these things, and I was in conversation with like people that I grew up with, their narrative was like, yeah, it's so horrible, but it's because like these black people like live in these awful areas and they just kind of get into more stuff and it's not their fault, and this very like pathological like patronizing narrative. But actually it really is just that this entire system is built on racism and exploitation and whatever way is easiest to siphon off and marginalize people to do a certain amount of free labor and to disenfranchise them from having a say in our political system. It's interesting. Very interesting.
So Critical Resistance is an organization that is dedicated to abolishing this phenomenon.
Yes, they are.
And all of the other ugly facets of the prison industrial complex. So there was just the 6-year celebration mm-hmm. that we had at PICA and
Portland Institute of Contemporary Art.
Thank you.
Don't speak in acronyms.
Thank you very much.
You're
Jamie
welcome.
Partridge.
You're welcome,
always
Alyssa
reminding
Pariah.
Us not to
Hey, it's me, Jamie. Hello.
Jamie Partridge is the host of Labor Radio, the long time.
Jamie Partridge
host of-
is my grandfather.
Lucky you.
Your father.
Lucky
you.
Me. Yeah. Okay, it's continue. Really wonderful. The Portland Institute for Contemporary Arts and Critical Resistance had their celebration there. And I was hoping that you can talk a little bit about the prison industrial complex and why CR fights against it and how.
Yeah. So the event had two really amazing speakers, also Marbury Stolle Butts, who is from Law for Black Lives, and Rachel Herzing, who is the other co-founder of Critical Resistance and now does, oh my gosh, I just had it in my head. the Center for Political Education. So they were both two really amazing speakers who spoke to a lot of what CR does and like broader though. And so Critical Resistance is fighting the prison industrial complex, which is very big. It includes a lot of things, including stuff like prisons, obviously, and trying to abolish prisons as well as abolishing policing. And so one of CR Portland's biggest campaigns is the Care Not Cops campaign, which has seen a lot of traction over the years. So as leading, like getting ready for 2020 looks at strategizing around that campaign with the other organizations who are a part of Care Not Cops, because it's a coalition/campaign. And so there's internal work that's going on to strategize how the next year is going to look, especially because our main targets have kind of been like at city council meetings. And so seeing where that goes. And I personally have only been in CR for about 3 months now. So I'm just starting to get into the Care Not Cops campaign personally, because I spent most of the last 3 months working on the benefit that just happened. So I'm personally really excited to get ready for the new year and see what's going to happen.
Can you tell us more about the Care Not Cops campaign? What is it? If somebody's never heard of it, what does it even mean?
So it means looking at allocating, especially one of the biggest focuses over the years has been looking at allocating all the extra funding they're trying to put into policing into actual like mental health services that are not police focused at all. Because I think a lot of people can misinterpret that as like giving the cops more training to help people who might be having mental health crises. And that's not what it is at all. We don't want the cops to have any more power than they currently have. That's kind of like a brief look at it.
Wonderful. Portland spends $600,000 on policing every single day.
Yeah.
Think about the money you pay in taxes. And think about how, and think about how much money other people pay in taxes, how much corporations don't pay in taxes. And then think about how much money that is.
Yeah.
That collectively goes to $600,000 a day. I'm serious.
This week, the Willamette Week also put out an article relating to this. So the plan to reallocate the 911 dispatch to a new entity so that it wouldn't go to police. This is something that's been championed by Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. And I also just want to say, whenever I bring up Commissioner Hardesty, I want to let people know that if you have any video of police in Portland beating people down, you can just send them to
Joanne Hardesty
on Portland City Council, who will share it out and talk about it and come against it. So I want people to know that. But the fight for Care Not Cops, while it's not directly related to this initiative, it is sort of coming from a similar spirit, in that the police shouldn't have to be dispatched for every single 911 call. Because one of the things that, and this is in this week's Willamette Week, and I think people should read more about it, it's called An Injury to One. We found out that more than half of all 911 calls last year were for quote unquote unwanted people. So the police get dispatched to end up not making any arrests, not taking any action, because these are just people that don't have anywhere else to go because they're poor, oftentimes houseless, or experiencing mental health issues that are arising, and that it's not needed for them. So there's a someone who's trained in crisis intervention and harm reduction that will be dispatching people to a lot of these calls now. And there is a debate about whether or not that's appropriate, because of course the police don't want to give up that that power and the money that comes with it. So I want people to keep an eye on this in particular.
And really, I would say that this is kind of like, especially from like a critical resistance organizational standpoint, this is like kind of an entryway into people being able to like envision what it does look like to have communities without policing, because we know that police more often than not harm people who are having a mental health crisis, or people who are houseless, people who really do just need help from someone who's trained to give them that sort of help. So this is a good way to look at what does it look like if we don't have policing for this, and what if we don't have policing in general in our whole lives, which would be the ideal.
And I mean one of the things that people say a lot when you question like the need to call the police, or when you kind of posit the idea of a world without policing, one of the things people say is, yeah, that's great, but who do I call? Because like right now, the way that we're conditioned and the way that our system and community and society works a lot of the time is like that there is actually nobody else to call. There aren't, like, you can talk about building in your communities, but right now, functionally, there are not a lot of other systems that are reliable, because that's the main thing about the police is, like, it's unsafe, it's unethical, it's racist, but the single thing it has is reliability. If you call the police, they'll probably come. And so I think this can start to, like, exactly what Mason was saying, like, reshape the idea of, like, yeah, you should have some, but you should have reliable mechanisms in our society to fight violence, or like whatever's going on, anything that pushes somebody into being unsafe. That does not inherently have to be the police, and it shouldn't be the police.
So you might be calling the pilot project called Portland Street Response. And people should also know that the police want to stop this this process from going forward. So I just want people to stay paying attention to this, and I'll update people as we go. Related to this is also in the Willamette this week, Standing Room Only, speaking about the Timber Stadium and their continuing expansion and renovations and all. They petitioned the city to make the street next to their stadium where they had recently put an an awning, a covering, to make that area free from houseless people. So there would be no no camping, no asking for money, none of that on that street. And they would be able to get access to just have those people quickly removed. And there's also difficulty in making that happen on their end, but it's not over. So it's still up in the air. And I want to encourage people to support Right to Survive, the organization righttosurvive.org. Please check them out and support them. They do much of the houseless advocacy in the city, and they are led and run by people who experience and have experienced houselessness and are not making money from a developer. So they've got some skin in the game. It's not over. They still might get their way. So people need to also be vigilant, paying attention to that, and hopefully remembering to support houseless people in their fight for dignity, and at the very least keeping them keeping a business like the Timber Stadium from being able to just make them get away from the public sidewalk just because they built an awning.
Could you imagine like a corporate entity having enough power to say it actually doesn't matter if there are people who might use this space to get access to their basic needs? You can't imagine it. But, you know.
We've got a bunch of other flyers in studio, so I want to let people know about what's all going on.
Something so exciting is happening. It's the Scrooge of the Year Awards. So every year, Jobs of Justice, which Alyssa is the co-chair of, she really is everywhere, hosts an, a party that where people cast votes for the Scrooge of the Year. And the nominees are generally horrible bosses, managers throughout the city who have shown an especially severe level of exploitative practice towards their workers over the year. And whoever gets the most votes wins.
You buy the votes.
Oh, that's right.
That's a very important part of it. That's why it's Scrooge and not Santa.
You buy, that's why. That's the difference between Scrooge and Santa. Santa's a socialist, a communist, who redistributes the wealth and power that he has to millions and millions of children every year.
I've never heard of the Marxist analysis of Santa Claus.
And
please
Scrooge hoards his wealth. Yeah, that's why Santa uses the power that he has to go around the world and give children things that, you know, give their own little bit of wealth. So your child's not just going to have a Furby. They can sell it.
Furby?
Do you know what a Furby is?
I know what a Furby is. Okay. I didn't know people still wanted them.
No, they came back. Scary? They are very scary.
I feel like they're not coming back with kids, though.
No, they did. They really? Listen, I have a 13-year-old sister, and she got a Furby for Christmas when she was like 8 or 9 or 10. They came back a few years ago. Oh. Yeah, anyway. So the Scrooge,
as ghosts.
As ghosts, she got a ghost for me. I'm from Santa. I saw it happen. Santa came into our living room and conjured the ghost of the Furby, and now it lives in our house, my family's house. So this
year, a pentagram on top of your tree.
I come from a very, very pagan family.
So Scrooge.
Scrooge.
They call it that because
Scrooge, the capitalist.
All of the nominees every year are at awful. The party. And I invite people to come to the party.
Hoard their wealth and treat their workers terribly. And the party that Alyssa's inviting you to is December 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the SEIU Local 49 Ballroom. Nominations for the 2018 Scrooge of the Year Award are now open. If your organization would like to nominate a very bad boss, politician, corporation, or any other deserving entity, you can fill out the form at https://forms.gle/v1cqycume 3NYV7219.
That was painful. just like we don't like to do acronyms.
Hopefully you got also, that.
Just like we don't want to do acronyms, we also don't want to read complicated URLs.
Well, make it a lot easier. You can't see on the radio. So.
You can just go to Portland Jobs with Justice. And
you just Google Jobs with Justice Scrooge of the Year 2019.
So the way that you will win Scrooge of the Year is that at the party, in the boxes that have the names of all of the nominees, you have to buy a ticket for every vote that you want to cast.
Wow.
So it is the person who gets the most votes, who bought the most tickets, that will be the Scrooge. And then
funding.
And then members of our coalition will go visit them and give them their award and surprise said boss or bad entity that they have won the Scrooge of the Year.
As somebody who has has presented or has been a part of the presenting of many Scrooge of the Year awards, Alyssa Pariah, how do they usually react? I've never actually gone on a Scrooge of the Year award presentation. They always wonder, really, do they usually walk away?
Yeah, they're not happy about it. They generally are people who don't want to be approached by anyone who's not a millionaire with a deal for them. Yeah, so.
Wow, I love that. It's wonderful.
People cower when they see Jobs of Justice coming if they've done bad stuff to their workers. Yeah.
As they should. Another event coming up. How to strike. We have paper in the studio today, so it sounds a little different, more authentic. Usually we have our computers and our phones. How to strike and win. A labor notes guide. This is going to be held by the DSA Labor Study Group and Red Talk Development. And it's Saturdays. This is a multiple times event. You have multiple chances to go. Saturday, November 23rd, that's passed, until December 14th. So every Saturday between those dates at 1 p.m. at 2249 East Burnside.
It's the IWW house.
Thank you very much. So if you are involved in any kind of labor struggle or want to be, you're noticing all of the bad things that are going on at your job, you feel like it's time to fight back, or you're currently involved in labor struggle at your work, you think that these are tools that you might need, how to strike and win, come on down to the IWW house and have some DSA folks talk to you about how to strike and win.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
It is pretty exciting. So I hope that, I'll be able to go check it out soon. Anyway, what else is going on?
There's more.
In this wild, wild world.
There's more. Have you seen some of the back and forth about transit cops lately?
Yes, I have. So they're very juicy. I love it.
There was like a dozen of them today, this afternoon around like 3 o'clock out by Pioneer Square. And they've just been sort of making themselves more visible. Yeah.
I've noticed.
So in Street Roots, which I think is the best paper in town, and you should always buy it whenever you see a vendor, buy a Street Roots, and if you've already read it, get one for your friends. Mm-hmm. And they also have their holiday zine.
Really?
That just came out. Yeah.
That is?
It's $4. It's called Transformation.
Aww.
So whenever you see a Street Roots vendor with the weekly paper, you can look and see all of the submissions that have poetry, prose, art by people that are Street Roots vendors.
I love that.
Street Roots is a newspaper that is run with the idea of houseless people being able to just engage with people who are not houseless, because that's like one of the main problems is the stigmatization, right? Like trying to sort of like will them out of your mind, you know, like it's not okay. So you go out there, you buy a paper and strike up a conversation and be decent. Why don't you? Anyway, Helen Hill, who's a staff writer for Street Roots, is talking particularly about how the TriMet fare enforcers, she feels, are targeting houseless people. So she rides often, and she says that there are people who come in off of the airport all of the time. She rides the Red Max line, and they just come into Portland and they don't get their ticket, and they're not getting hassled. But she points out that if someone appears to be homeless, then the fare enforcers are more likely to target them. And in her article, it's just called Public Transit, Life on the Streets, in this week's Street Roots, she says that they will kick you off if they think that you're someone who hasn't paid your fare, giving you a hard time, and people who appear to sort of not be in such financial straits don't have to pay.
Yeah. So the stuff around this kind of started to come up recently when TriMet posted a very, very in poor taste tweet thread, this messy tweet thread about, he was like, we've all seen it. Somebody getting on without their fare. So obnoxious. We know how you feel. Because of this, we are going to be hiring 9 new fare enforcement officers. And they're also starting a new program where you can, like, have to settle your fare evasion tickets out of court, which I think I read something on the show before, but feels like it's like you don't have to deal with that whole thing. We can just make it convenient. But obviously, like, they're probably getting more money out of that. And people were upset, and they were like, many people responded basically saying, the only problem that I have with the fare enforcement officers is that they're racist and classist and are, constantly.
You said that on Twitter?
No, many people said that on Twitter. Oh, I did say that on Twitter.
Okay.
So, I mean.
Well, thank you to everyone who said that on Twitter.
Yeah, it made the rounds. And then, alongside what's going on in New York with the MTA, who recently pulled a gun on a black teenager who got caught, I guess, not paying his fare, as many people do in public transit, on public transit across the country and the world every single day. So there have been many protests throughout New York centered on not criminalizing fare evasion. And I think with the kind of broader, or pushing forward the message that public transportation should be free and accessible, especially when we know that carbon emissions and for the burning of fossil fuels is destroying the earth, and we need as fast as possible comprehensive, accessible, free / affordable public transportation. There has been actions.
There was one today.
Yeah, today.
Youth Liberation Front put on an event particularly to demand free ridership, and pushing on TriMet to do that. Also, Opal Environmental Justice has a long-going campaign for this with their Up With Riders, where they point out that a very low amount of money, I think it's 16% of money that comes into TriMet actually comes from fares, and that the bulk of it comes from other grants and programs that they're involved in, and that they would do better financially, not even bringing in the moral question here, which I think is clear, but that they wouldn't have to have fare enforcers at all, and the ridership would go up so much that they would end up being more financially solvent if they would get rid of fares entirely.
Yeah.
So people should stay up on Opal Environmental Justice and their Up With Riders campaign. There is going to be an event, and I'll get to it, but let people know about some of the other stuff that's coming up. And
yeah,
I'll get back to the Opal event that I think a lot of people are going to be getting turned out to attend.
Yeah. Another event that is coming up is, ever heard of the Postal Service? This is the
this is tomorrow.
Yeah, very timely. The Postal Protest Rally, 97217.
The zip code.
That's the zip code. On this flyer. It's Saturday. That's tomorrow. Last week on the show, we went over the days of the week and the order that they fall in. So you should know that that's tomorrow after Friday, November 30th, from noon to 1. It's short. At the Kenton Post Office, which is at 2130 North Kilpatrick Street, Portland, Oregon. Again, 97217. Fix Kenton Arbor Lodge and Overlook Mail. End erratic, unreliable, haphazard delivery and return the mail delivery routes. Stop understaffing and overworking mail carriers and return service to the people. Yeah, so this is a protest that is in the name of erratic and poor service to the people of Kenton Arbor Lodge and Overlook and to the mail carriers who are being mistreated, exploited, overworked by their bosses. Yeah. I feel like this is something that people take for granted a lot. I don't know.
I have a
chronic illness, and I have suffered due to the hard work and lack of I guess resources and proper
allocation.
Parameters, allocation. Yeah, yeah. To also works because I have missed shipments of medications and gotten sick. So. This is very important.
Olivia has cystic fibrosis, and that's why she coughs, and we will not ever
Or the cough button.
No.
We will hit the dump button.
The dump button is for cursing.
And we don't curse on this show, so it's not even necessary. Anyway, but if you want to know what you can do besides just going to this rally, they're saying call 1-800-ASK-USPS and complain and tell them to fix the 9127 mail. So again, that's call 1-800-USPS or 1-800-275-8777. Always wanted to do that. Okay. That's it.
You've always wanted to do that?
Yeah.
Now that you've done it, how do you feel? Are you fulfilled?
Feels so good. Ooh. Wow. Anxiety, PTSD cured. Now that I've read off that number.
Wow.
Thanks.
All right. The TriMed board meeting for a fair moratorium that I was talking about earlier that is being led by people at Opal Environmental Justice with their Up With Writers campaign. That's going to be Wednesday, December 11th at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. That's at the World Trade Center, Portland, at 121 Southwest Salmon. And they're asking for people to show up and support a lot of the people who are putting this forward and are championing it are high school students.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to remember to specifically be supporting young people as they go into struggle. This is,
we need them. They need us.
So again, Wednesday, December 11th, 8 a.m. Get up early. If you're not working, you don't have something else going on, try to pull yourself up out of bed if you can.
Try.
And come out and support the youth that are leading this campaign. And let's get TriMet to put a moratorium on fares.
Yeah.
Let's stop the harassment of our houseless community members who get targeted by fare enforcement. They can't afford it. They end up getting a court date. That's more money they don't have. That gets charged. It's a whole megilla, and we don't need it. So, again, Wednesday, December 11th, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah. I feel like I've already seen an increase in the number of fare enforcement officers. So this is really happening, and we can really change it. I found some interesting information that I'd like to share with you all. It's great, so I hope you're excited about it. If you live in Portland or like the Pacific Northwest, you know, and probably have heard for a long time, that there's an earthquake that is inevitably coming to destroy our lives. It's not an if, but it's a win, says Blair Stenvik, who wrote this article in the Portland Mercury called On Shaky Ground. And what Blair shares with us is that when and if this earthquake comes, very likely what will follow it here in Portland, Oregon, the place we know and love, will be the largest oil spill in the history of the world.
Say it again.
The largest oil spill in the history of the world. When this earthquake
in Portland, Oregon, people think Portland, Oregon is so green.
And you're wondering, how could this happen? I recycle. I never ask for straws when I go to Popeyes.
I don't go to Popeyes either.
I don't even go to Popeyes because I'm plant based. When I do go to Popeyes, all I get is the red beans and rice. I go to Popeyes a lot, and I've been dealing with the straw situation there. Because if you don't ask, they don't give you straw. And I'm like, well, I'm already drinking out of a plastic cup and a plastic lid, and now I don't have a straw. It doesn't make any sense. And you're like, ugh, my carbon footprint is literally zero. I don't drive a car. I walk everywhere. How is this happening? Well, it's not your fault. I'll tell you whose fault it is. That threat is thanks to the Critical Energy Infrastructure Hub, the CEI Hub, a six-mile strip of land in northwest Portland, bordered by Northwest St. Helens Road and the Willamette River. That is home to at least 10 fuel storage terminals owned by, here's the people whose fault it is, it's not your fault, by companies like Chevron, BP, and Kinder Morgan. Good old Kinder. When the quake hits, the hub's heavy fuel tanks could easily come unmoored, spilling their contents. Sorry, I'm laughing because it's so horrible. Spilling their contents
into
the Willamette and possibly setting Forest Park ablaze.
Wow.
Isn't that so awful? I hate this. So, yeah.
I love so much that your reaction to things that horrify you is to laugh.
Yeah, because really in my mind, it's like,
things about you.
Can you believe this? It's crazy that people wouldn't let this happen. Mm-hmm. It's me laughing at how unhinged people can be.
Yeah.
Like, how unhinged are you to
put these
10 fuel tanks next to the Willamette River in a place where a life-changing...
The city and the county both put up $50,000 to be able to launch a project where they can assess how much money it would actually cost to clean up a potential oil spill so that they would make the people who are profiting off of the site pay into a fund where the money could be released to pay for that, because if not, it would end up on taxpayers to have to pay for the cleanup. But they are not willing to put up that money, if you can imagine.
And there's that biggest flaw in capitalism. It is just inherently self-destructive. It keeps going and going and going. It doesn't care even about the vehicle that's holding it. And they don't care. And so, get ready for that. your green city is about to have the biggest...
Dang, you already knew I was freaking out about that, too.
Yeah, Mason's really scared of the earthquake. Really.
Oh,
because, no, like, everything would shut... Like, we would... A lot of people would probably be dead within the first day or two.
Yeah, the
and that would be even worse. Yeah.
Yeah, so even if
The bridges are going to crumble.
Yeah, the bridges would crumble. There wouldn't be access, like, any food... No food would be coming in. Mm-hmm. And people would probably not likely be able to get out very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like my biggest fear in the world. But that freaks me out a lot. Thanks.
I mean, if you look at all your fears lined up, probably the most catastrophic one.
Well, it's just because, like, you don't know when it's going to happen.
Well, just make sure that you're supporting people as they rise up and fight back and demand that there be good planning so that we can... ride it out and we can be as safe as possible when the inevitable hits. It's not impossible, so we just make sure that we show up for people when they are struggling to fight back.
Yeah, and going off of that, it says there is one thing environmental advocates know: If a Portland area earthquake were to occur tomorrow, the private companies that own facilities in the CEI hub would not be held responsible for the full cost of the damage. Generally, when these things happen,
they'll make commercials that say, "We're sorry."
Sorry.
We're sorry. Oh,
gosh. Dang. So, yeah. Generally, when these things happen, you know, disaster capitalism. Mm-hmm. Disaster hits, mm-hmm. and the corporate shills, entities, the big money guys get paid back through all of the money that then gets poured in to mm-hmm. rebuild infrastructure mm-hmm. in the places where these disasters happen in the name of, you know, rebuilding, mm-hmm. bringing resources back to people. But really, it's just like more aggressive taxing, more money being taken off of working people's backs to further enrich these people, because now they have to build whole new infrastructure and they get to build it more expensive and better and say that they're revitalizing these communities. So watch out. And this is why, you know, climate change is true. Feel the ground shaking.
Watch out.
Stand up, fight back, watch out.
Thank you, Olivia.
You're welcome.
Olivia, there's something else. Take. There's something else coming up
what?
In the next week that I want you to go to.
There's so much happening.
Well, there is so much happening.
I'm joking. Go ahead.
So you we all do what we can, right?
Yeah, we do what we can. We can what we do.
Sure.
Exactly.
This is a rally to support.
Sure.
This is a rally to support PSU professors.
Oh, I have my degree from Portland State University.
Thanks to those professors.
So does Mason.
That are in the Professors Union, AUP, who are
yes.
going to be in bargaining. So there's going to be a rally to support PSU professors on Friday, December 6th.
Okay.
11 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Okay.
It's going to be at the engineering building at 1930 Southwest 4th Avenue. So
I know where that is.
Yeah, so let's go to that and make some noise.
This is
number
six. What day of the week is that?
This is Friday.
At what time?
Friday, December 6th, 11 a.m.
Oh, I'll be at work, but I'm teaching my children that I will do my best to get there.
So people who can show up and support, again, should go to the engineering building. That's at 1930 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. And this is as PSU professors are bargaining with the administration,
mm-hmm.
who's claiming that they don't have money. What was it that they claim? That there's
a deficit. And they don't have enough money to basically raise what they're being able to pay professors right now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which they've had this whole campaign basically saying there actually isn't a deficit. In fact, y'all are actually making more than you did the last year and the year before that and the year before that. And they have this whole large data collection that's on their website, actually. So you can go and view it. You can also see a condensed, like, 5-page version of it with, like, spreadsheets that actually proves this using PSU's own data.
Yeah, this is PSU AAUP. So when you go searching for it, yeah, it's really extensive.
Yes. So basically what they're doing is saying, we're done with how little we're being paid. We're done with the lack of benefits that we're able to receive. Most teachers don't just teach at PSU. Many of them work several other jobs, work at other universities. I know a professor personally who works at 3 different universities, teaches 7 different classes this single quarter, and still barely makes more than I do.
Wow.
So it's really wild stuff, and they're also really pushing for PSU to end this campaign that they need more money from the state, that they don't have enough funds based off the tuition they receive, even though tuition continues to rise and rise and rise, especially for out-of-state and international students, which, of course, the university targets to bring in.
And they continue to tell students that, like, the tuition money is, like, the linchpin to to these financial troubles where, like, you can get the money other places. Like,
exactly. No.
Like, something is magical about the mm-hmm. about the tuition dollars. And yet, they raised it every year that I was there. And here we are.
And this is the front story on the PSU Vanguard as well. I don't have it with me, but Portland State University Vanguard, the school newspaper, has this as their cover story. So people who want to learn more should check that out.
Go to the website or pick it up, Portland State Vanguard.
They're calling out the administration for lying and supporting the professors, so that, you know, they're on the right side of this issue. So
yeah, honestly, I think whatever, it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
You're holding back some hot takes about the PSU.
It's not a hot take. I think my roommate wrote that article, but it's not relevant. But yeah,
right. So what else is there coming up?
Oh. What else is there? Have you ever heard of Bernie Sanders? I hadn't until I looked at this flyer. I looked him up. He's a dashing young man. Beautiful silver hair, a killer smile, wonderful sweaters. And he's running for president. Surprisingly.
Of what?
Of the United States of America.
So-called
yeah. United States of America. We've had a few presidents. We're on 45, so he wants to be the 46th.
What does the flyer say?
So the flyer says, Labor for Bernie. It's a candidate town hall on workers' rights. Live from...
It's totally fine, Olivia.
I had this next part covered up, and I thought that he was coming to Portland up until eventually, I moved my finger.
Eventually,
live from Iowa, Saturday, December 7th, noon to 2. You can go watch this candidate town hall with Mr. Bernard Sanders at the DCBC. That's 14 cool. Northeast Killingsworth. Yeah, it is cool.
Dismantle.
Northeast Killings
Build Center, DCBC.
Join other union activists and Bernie supporters to cheer the best candidate of the working class, the labor movement, and our fight for a government that works for all, not just the 1%. To get involved, go to Labor for Bernie PDX. That's bit.ly/LaborForBerniePDX.
I'm just going to start crossing out the URLs on the flyers before.
I will still read them, and it will take me longer. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so if you're interested, I am. I love watching all this mess with the Democrats running. And Bernie is the best candidate that we have. Doesn't go as far as he should, but you know what? He's a good man. I like him, and he posted a picture recently with Ariana Grande. So if you're interested in going to this candidate town hall, be at the DCBC September 7th, Saturday at noon.
I'm gonna let you end the show explaining who Ariana Grande is.
Ariana Grande is a pop star, very famous. Her biggest hit, I believe, is called Thank You Next. She is a activist, but most people don't think that. And she first became famous on the Nickelodeon show Victorious, playing the character of Kat. Her debut album is called Honeymoon Avenue. Her most recent album is called Thank You Next. She looks black, but she is white, and she is Italian, and I like her, and everybody makes fun of me. And she has very long extensions.
Thank you so much
for listening to The Struggle. With Olivia and Alyssa and Mason and Angeline. I'm sorry that... I'm being weird. I'm on a new medication.
Good
we'll
night.
See how it goes.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
KBOO is having our annual book and record sale Saturday, December 21st from 12 to 10 p.m. There's a special member-only preview hour from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. The sale will be located at Jupiter Next in the Arium Ballroom at 900 East Burnside Street. KBOO is currently accepting donations of used and good condition books, records, CDs, and cassette tapes. KBOO is hosting sorting parties for this event on Friday, December 6th and Friday, December 13th at 5 to 7 p.m. at KBOO's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. If you're able to help with sorting or help on the day of the sale, please contact volunteer at kboo.org. We hope to see y'all there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Requiem for a Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge in Portland. This is the Portland debut of Dan Kaufman's band's Modern Western Opera and a benefit to stop a fossil fuel pipeline in Oregon. Requiem for the Rogue tells the fictional story of a Southern Oregon landowner who runs afoul of a modern-day Sheriff of Nottingham, who is in cahoots with a fossil fuel pipeline company. Again, that's Requiem for the Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. You don't own the water.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. That's 90.0 FM, kboo.fm.